This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Busy Tuesday on deck as we welcome you into Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 158. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're live, as always, in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. And I'm very happy to be back. Thanks for holding down the fort yesterday. You're the best. You're so great at what you do.
I'm contractually obligated to do so. So that's how this goes. But it is an important day. It is a very big day, actually. A milestone, if you will, today. Today, I would say, for Money Moves, officially marks the start of football season because no more vacations, no more nothing. We are on football schedule. Week zero starts next week, so very excited for that. You will start to travel the week after, am I correct?
Yes, no week zero assignment for me.
Yep, so well, you're too good for that at this point right now. Although week zero looks really good. Actually, week zero looks like a ton of fun. But either way, this is the unofficial start for football season, I think, for us from a scheduling standpoint today.
Yeah, no more vacation after this. I am really excited for week zero, and I am every year because I very rarely work a week zero game, which means I actually get to sit back and relax and watch college football, which I normally don't get to do as much. So very fun thing. I do, however, have my calendar already marked for the second week of December, where I won't have to travel that weekend. It's that sweet spot between conference championship weekend and the bowl season really getting underway. So I'm like, okay, I'll have a Saturday off then, but from now till then, it is literally every single day. And for you too, I know, like, we both work multiple jobs here in addition to what we do at VSiN, so we're gonna be locked and loaded from here on out.
I mean, look, I'll hardly complain about it, but in a couple of weeks, it's 7 day weeks, and very much looking forward to it. Actually
ended my vacation on an interesting note. We went to California over the weekend, San Diego area. We stayed in Carlsbad for a couple days, then downtown, like, did some boating and stuff. But I also went to a bar that I haven't been to since I was in college at San Diego State. And boy, did I feel old. There were people that were older than me there. No. But I was like, I'm not made for this anymore. I am in bed at 9:30 if there's not a game for me to watch type of a lady, and just ready to be knocked out. Like, I stayed out until like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Hell yeah.
That does not happen. I don't do that.
I drank wine the other day.
Did you like it? Are you a wine? You're not really a big wine person.
No, but I've been drinking more and I have been enjoying it. I'll just say that.
All right. Get on board. Yeah. I've recently developed my palate a little bit. That trip to Napa changed me.
Oh, I got no palate. I just like it. All tastes the same to me.
Come on. I thought you splurged for their $22 glass the other day at Barry's because you were like, hey, I want something good. I've got a more sophisticated taste for this stuff.
Tasted like I was in church.
I've got a taste for the rundown. So let's set the table for everything else we have to come today.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
We've got some good stuff on deck for you today, including some win total wars. There are some cool markets up on DraftKings right now where you can bet head-to-head win totals, as well as win, lose, or draw style options for a few teams with head coaches against their former teams. And I think that'll be a little cool exercise to get into.
I pride myself on being somebody that, when presented with new information, is willing to change his stance on something. And I will say that one of the teams that we're going to discuss was relatively high on. And then I've been watching and watching and watching and getting more and more information. And I got to tell you, probably going to take it on the chin here.
I know what head-to-head you're discussing in that area, and I don't think there's a right answer.
I think there is.
We will also have VSiN managing editor Adam Burke on the program today. We'll get some Burke's bets in Major League Baseball for today's 15-game card. One in particular, he thinks we could get a lot of runs. Also talk through some NFL preseason early takeaways and things you need to know heading into week two of the preseason.
Yep, can't wait to talk to Burke about a ton of stuff. I mean, the preseason stuff, sure, but look, man, we're in the home stretch of Major League Baseball, essentially. And in, 2 weeks, we'll forget that it even exists until the postseason begins. But we have a race for NL MVP. We've got a ton of races for playoff spots. There is a team that a lot of people did not believe in that over the weekend decided to put the knife in the side of one of their opponents, and I think they're going to start to pull away in their division. So we'll tell you who that is and what their staying power is.
And we'll talk NL MVP in a moment, but one more thing that we've got on deck today. Our NFL training camp tour will continue, slowly but surely making our way out of the East Coast. Some school searching today as we stop in Minnesota. After last year's quarterback play held the Vikings back, is Kyler Murray the answer? I've got some pretty damning numbers that have me leaning no, but curious your opinion on the matter.
How you could say that, I have no idea, considering Kevin O'Connell is untouchable and a god when it comes
whisperer.
To quarterbacks. Yeah, of course. Even gets credit for the 3 hours that Daniel Jones spent with the team.
Listen, I'm not going to hate on the SDSU star, Kevin O'Connell. However, I do think that'll be a really interesting conversation, especially based on some of our other thoughts around the division. They are a team, though, that could be a little bit of a wild card, maybe the most potential for variance on what their ceiling versus what their floor could be. While that division is a very interesting race, you mentioned what the most interesting race is going on right now in baseball, and you can't spell MVP without PCA these days. Had another unbelievable performance last night, walks it off against the Chicago White Sox, also had a leadoff home run in the game. He's the first player in Major League Baseball since 2010 to have a leadoff and a walk-off homer in the same game, first ever Cub to do it. Meanwhile, he does that, and Shohei Ohtani's like, hey, I'm still pretty good too. Went 4-for-5 with 3 RBI and 2 home runs as well.
That's why I like these sort of races. I mean, this is stupid. This is going to be Matthew Stafford and Drake May all over again.
Sure.
People are going to plant their flags for whatever bets they have, and then you're going to be stupid if you pick the other side, whatever it is. There's a few things here though. To your point, it's funny the narrative slant of what happened last night. You would expect that Shohei Ohtani did absolute dog doo-doo yesterday. And to your point, he was very, very good. This is essentially a pick right now. One of them has a very massive edge, though. It is that Shohei Ohtani is going to be healthy enough to pitch at some point. Mm-hmm. And he's going to add to his resume in terms of his ability to pitch. And Mitch and I brought this up a couple of weeks ago, actually, on Pod of the Futures. And we talked about it with Mike Palm, actually, the other day as well. And it's worth pointing out again. If Shohei Ohtani's starts that he has made came on the back end of the season as opposed to the front end of the season, he would be like a -1,000 favorite.
He'd be back to what he was last month.
100%. And voters, I will say this till I am blue in the face, voters do not ebb and flow like the odds do with every single performance. Voters look at the whole entire picture, and they will view Shohei Ohtani's starts as just those starts. They will not view them at the beginning of the year. They will not view them at the end of the year. They'll view them in their whole entirety, especially if more come as well. That is something that I think the betting market is ignoring and that most are ignoring as well when it comes to Pete Crow Armstrong's performance here. And I'll disagree with one of our colleagues. Dustin Sweetelson brought this up in Cashing Out yesterday, tweeted out the clip. He brought up the thought of Ohtani fatigue. I think if there was a voting conglomerate in sports that was somewhat fatigue resistant, it would be Major League Baseball, because there are so many numbers tied into these guys' performances statistically that it's almost hard to have fatigue, because the numbers staring you in the face tell you every bit that this guy, whoever it is the best player in baseball this year. And I don't think you're going to run into that. So I think Ohtani is still going to win this award, is the whole point of this rant here. It's not even a rant, but I think Ohtani is going to win this thing. And the bottom line is, Stormy, wherever you fall on this, you should be able to make a profit, because one of them is going to have an odds on price next to them, and then one of them is going to hit like three dongs, and all of a sudden they are going to have an odds on price next to them. You should have a plus price on PCA. You should have a plus price to Shohei Ohtani at some point. Sit back and wait and see what happens.
Right now, where things sit, PCA is -115 compared to Ohtani at -105. It is interesting just looking at the batting numbers, though, side by side. Shohei's got a better batting average and OPS. One fewer home run, and they are deadlocked in RBI. The numbers are very, very similar across the board. Meanwhile, for obviously Ohtani, you have the pitching numbers that help out. And then for PCA, you've got the 30 steals that he has in his bag as well. So there's little things that can give one the edge over the other. We are deadlocked when you look at some of the prediction markets, 50% on each guy where things sit right now. So I'll ask you the question. The aforementioned Mitch Moss, Follow the Money, he tweeted earlier this morning, if the vote were to be today, who would you ultimately have as your winner? And I know this is still a long race. We still have a little bit of runway left here. And as you said, these things are going to go back and forth. But if it ended today, who would be your guy?
Ohtani.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, PCA is the favorite. He did peak as high as at -125 at one point last week, but -115, the prevailing number right now.
I mean, again, like he has started 14 games and pitched 85 and two-thirds innings. He has a 179
ERA. That doesn't just go away. Yes. I'm with you on that one. And we've had that conversation with Mike Palm a bunch at this point. He was just looking and waiting for the numbers to sway in PCA's favor so you could get a better opportunity on Ohtani. -1,000 at the All-Star break he was to be the NL MVP, currently -105. Elsewhere in LA, we did have some weird news in the NBA on both fronts for the Clippers and Lakers. You are obviously a Clippers fan, so maybe we can start there real quickly. ESPN reported yesterday the NBA, during its investigation into the Clippers for possible salary cap circumvention, found no evidence that Steve Ballmer paid Kawhi Leonard illicitly. The NBA then quickly releases a statement back saying the story, quote, contains numerous and significant inaccuracies, adding that the league's investigation investigation is not yet concluded. ESPN clapped back saying we stand by our reporting. It's a whole thing. Why is this important though for our purposes? The whole story then just pushes back the timing and understanding of what's going to happen with Kawhi and the Raptors deal being finalized.
Yeah, and it's important to note that, because I think a lot of people immediately went to like the, see, and I was one of them jokingly yesterday. I was like, see, my guy did nothing. It is important to note that the NBA is focused on whether the team's introduction of Leonard to team sponsors constitutes a violation of the league's rule prohibiting salary caps or conventions. So it's not like they're out of the woods. It's just that they have focused or changed the focus of this investigation. There could still be some sort of punishment. There could be some sort of punishment that then allows the Toronto Raptors to potentially renege on the deal and say, nope, we don't want anything on this. So we'll see what happens. But they're not really out of the woods yet. What we learned yesterday was the NBA has not found that there is a direct correlation between Ballmer and funneling the money. That's about it. There could still be something that comes down.
We do have some good news for another team of yours, but we'll get to that coming up in the next segment when we talk NFL. To go down the Lakers side of this real quickly, what is the latest from your understanding of the Jeannie Buss situation? Do you not think the Colts signing is good for their wide receiver room?
We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Nothing. I mean, the only important part for us as bettors, I think, for the Lakers story is who's going to be running this team in terms of decision-making, right? Jeannie Buss as the governor and had that five-year deal, now 4 years, because she served a year already under that new ownership group. According to some reports, those that are taking control of the team, Bob Iger and Kushner, have sat back and said, no, we're going to honor that deal that you had with the previous regime of ownership here. But they also reserve the right to just say, nah, maybe not. So we'll see what that means. But I think that's ultimately what that comes down to, because she is responsible for coach hiring, GM, which means Rob Pelinka is looking around going like, please stick around a little bit longer. So we'll see what that means. But that from a betting standpoint, and we won't feel the ramifications of that for a while if and when it does happen.
I can't imagine all my siblings going against me like that.
I mean, that's,
and
like, what's
me
the
just
pettiest
being like,
thing
but
you've done?
You need me. Yep. Sorry. Okay, we got to step aside here on Money Moves, but we're just getting started. So much more to come. We will talk about that signing with the Indianapolis Colts. A couple other signings to be aware of and injuries here in training camp and preseason. You need to know every day something new popping up. Stick around. We'll be right back on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
That is correct, Brent Musburger. Thank you for that lovely introduction. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you back here on Money Moves. Obviously, the NFL is around the corner. We are knee-deep in all things training camp, preseason action at this point. And with that, as we get closer to the NFL season, we're seeing more and more things pop up, whether it's little short-term deals, signings, injuries as well, it feels like, each and every day. So a lot going on that we're going to get into here. But I brought it up in passing last segment, thinking that maybe there was going to be an air of positivity for you for once about something Indianapolis Colts headed into 2026. Does not seem to be the case, but neither here nor there. In case you missed it, they did ultimately sign Keenan Allen on a one-year deal worth up to $8.32 million. Listen, I know he's 34 years old, okay? But he's still a Hall of Famer, considering where you sit right now in your wide receiver room. And you even made the point last week when we previewed Indy that look at this wide receiver room right now. With Alec Pierce injured, who else outside of Josh Downs can you name? It's a tough billing. So I think bringing in Keenan Allen should at least be a short-term positive, no?
I mean, sure. I think that my whole point here is that you were in a position and you let your wide receiver room get to a point where you need to sign Keenan Allen on August 18th to fill out your wide receiver room.
You mean you didn't want Nick Westbrook, Akine, or Austin Doolin to be your wide receiver too while Pierce is injured?
Ashton Doolin. You don't even know. Like, that's the whole point. That's the whole point of what's going on here. Like,
that was a slip of the tongue.
Yeah. I mean, the whole point here is just that. It's just the Colts. Last year, I'll say it 1,000 times over. At this time last year, you were looking at A.D. Mitchell Alec Pierce, Michael Pittman, mm-hmm. Josh Downs, Tyler Warren. It was a very, very deep wide receiver room. And then we know what happened. Pierce is injured. Pittman's in Pittsburgh. You traded A.D. Mitchell. And now all of a sudden you look around and it's just like, wow, like we just don't really have anybody in this room of consequence. It has become a position of weakness. And I think that is a problem. And while Keenan Allen might be able to provide you something, and I don't know what exactly you're going to ask of him either, and I'm not saying he's a bad receiver. To me, the whole point is just that. That you have let your wide receiver room get to this point where you do need to sign a player who is available in August. And here, like, because that's also it, right? You could say, and you're right, like, Keenan Allen is probably a Hall of Famer and has had a very good career and is one of the better wide receivers of his generation. He was also available to sign on August 18th to a one-year deal, potentially worth up to $8 million.
This had been, like, reportedly in the works, though, for a little while behind the scenes, right? Like, he and Steichen have had a relationship going back to his first time in the Chargers.
But again, he was available for a reason. Sure. If 20 other teams, 22 other teams felt like he had something to give them to this point, then you wouldn't be an emergency signing because your top receiver is injured and you look around your room and you're like, okay, I guess, right? I think that's part of that's my whole point. So I don't think it's one of those situations where like he hasn't had a 1,000-yard receiver season in the last 2 years and three out of the last four. I don't really think you're asking him to be a 1,000-yard receiver. I think the whole point to me and why I'm not jumping for joy is you needed to do this because of the way that you have let your wide receiver room mm-hmm. kind of deteriorate over the last calendar year.
Yeah, I don't think it changes any of our thoughts on right. what Indy is at this point, but it is a void that you needed to backfill, mm-hmm. at least for the short term, until you know that Alec Pierce is up and ready to go. Sticking with wide receivers, we also got the news, Saints rookie wideout Jordan Tyson, number 8 overall pick, is going to miss roughly 2 months with that right hamstring injury at this point. Could begin the season on short-term injured reserve, according to Ian Rappaport and others. And with that, we have seen the odds fall significantly for him now in offensive rookie of the year from a 6-1 shot to 35-1. And he is so talented. He's one of those players that was getting a lot of the hype already here in preseason for the connectivity that he had with Tyler Shuck. The Saints are a team I think a lot of people are pretty optimistic about mm-hmm. entering this year in the NFC South. This is a pretty big blow for them.
Well, so there's two ways to look at this, and we hit a little bit on this yesterday, but now that we have the official news, I wanted to ask you this because there's the Saints angle to it. And then I'm going to read you off some of this. Jeremiah Love got an ankle injury. He's out for the rest of the preseason. Jadarian Price, as we know, dinged up, did not participate in the preseason game over the weekend because he's got an upper leg injury. Mekhi Lemon has his own hamstring injury, not available. These names that I'm ripping off are four of the top options for offensive rookie of the year. Mm-hmm. He was one as well. So now all of a sudden there's all this attrition at the top of this award market. By the way, one of the names that is at the top, Fernando Mendoza, is not going to play to start the year, as you and I have discussed. And Cardale Tate is healthy and fine, but did not play well against your 49ers over the weekend. And so my whole point here being is...
Now your next two options are Dejon Stribling, by the way, who did have an unbelievable first preseason game, but his odds are now cut down from like 35-1 to 15-1 after one preseason game, which is a little crazy. Although, like, the opportunity is going to be there, you would imagine, in San Francisco.
100%.
KC Concepcion is your next shot. You think the Browns offense is going to do anything, that he's your next shot on the board?
Denzel Boston. Very interesting. And Carson Beck. Right. Yeah. So that's my whole point. And we talked about this at length, Mitch and I, on Pod of the Futures, because then we got the news about Tyson eventually, which is just, all right, like, what does this mean? And I actually think you could sit there and say about his odds and way they've been cut, I think it means you bet Dejon Stribling still.
Yeah.
The opportunity is going to be there. He is the lone healthy option outside of Carnell Tate. And I don't know if you went back and watched it all, but the snaps for Carnell Tate were less than impressive against your 49ers.
Yeah.
Not able to create separation, look kind of sluggish. And again, I'm not going to pretend to be somebody who can break down the nuances of wide receiver play, but it just didn't look great on screen. And so if you're right about maybe Tate struggling, or if you're not as high on the Titans as you and I are, for example, it just keeps leading back to Stribling, even at 15-1. There's so much injury attrition and availability attrition. We're going to talk about Fernando Mendoza there. Like, that to me means the guy at 15-1 who had 7 targets, 6 receptions, whatever it was against the Titans, and looks like he's going to be at the top of the list for the 49ers just because of the attrition they're suffering with their roster. Why not at 15-1?
Yeah, he's probably, it is interesting at 15-1 that is your best option health-wise right now. And based on the short term, what we've seen at this point. Also, we haven't even mentioned the Christian McCaffrey element of this too. If he's dealing with the tightness and it ends up being slightly more concerning than the 49ers have led on, because we've seen both sides of this for CMC 2 years ago where they said, oh no, we're not concerned for him week one, and then he ends up missing almost the entire season. And then compared to last year where we had all of the concerns in the preseason, and then he ends up playing every single game. So I don't know which version of it we're going to get with Christian McCaffrey, but if he is limited in any fashion, that's just another open door.
And you might argue with this or not because you're a 49er super fan, but like, miss me with Deebo Samuel. I'm sorry. Like, I think that DeJuan Tripling, it's not like he's not going to play Samuel, but I'm just saying I don't think his presence would take away from the younger, potentially more dynamic option in Tripling.
No, he helps out the room, obviously, for what is as limited as they are, but I think he's still going to do some of that gadget stuff anyways as well. And so the role is just different for Deebo.
Maybe he's going to be a starting running back if Christian McCaffrey's hurt. Who
we might need him. Yeah. We might get Kyle Juszczyk in there. We also had another signing with your Atlanta Falcons, but are they maybe not your anymore? We'll discuss that a little bit later. Yeah. But Za'Darius Smith signs a one-year deal worth up to $8 million. Worked out with the Browns last week, and there were reports that he was close to finalizing a deal with Cleveland. That ends up obviously not coming to fruition. And now this is the second veteran pass rusher and former Brown that didn't end up signing there going somewhere else, which is Jadeveon Clowney, also ending up going back to Houston instead.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more of a focus on Atlanta. Excuse me if I could speak. We talked to Josh Kendall yesterday.
I just think that's interesting with Cleveland. Oh, they have these guys have the opportunity to go back and don't
talk about my Browns like that. Our Browns, Adam. Adam Burke is sitting in the back waiting to join us coming up in a little bit. But I would just say that this is it's similar to Keenan Allen, right? I'll be consistent. Look, it's not really great that your position group is in such a point where you have to go sign a veteran who's available in August in a one-year deal. And that's exactly where the Falcons are at this point right now with the suspension of James Pierce Jr., injury as well. Like, this is a really big deal for where this edge rusher group is at. And so it's not great for the backfield at all, the defensive backfield. You need to hold up a coverage way more now. I don't know if you're going to be able to rush the passer. It's bad for the defense overall that you just have to go out there and get it. Again, it's similar to Allen. Za'Darius Smith has had a great career. He's a very good edge rusher at his peak, but there's a reason why you're available, and hopefully he can help you out. But the edge position for the Falcons is in a very, very rough spot right now.
I've said it once. I've said it 1,000 times. Throw a dart in that division. And it's honestly like it's looking better and better for the Panthers and Bucks by the day with what we're seeing from Atlanta and New Orleans.
Did I miss something with the Panthers?
What do you mean?
I assume they got rid of Bryce Young.
You're not going to be allowed to take any pictures with that, that Bryce Young truther t-shirt I'm going to wear on Sunday.
It's funny because we've swung so far. I feel like I've been pretty consistent. So
no,
we
Carolina
went from,
has so many injuries, too.
Well, it's like that, but I'm just talking about the perception of Young. Like, we went from, he's the worst talent we've ever seen, and I was like, he's not that bad. Like, he's going to be fine. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, this team can win the division. I'm like, all right, I don't think he's that good.
I mean,
good.
They did
like,
just win the division, so he was that good. But neither here nor there.
Yeah, he was great. He was lighting them up.
What I'm saying is, this division is, like, who wants to like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now? Nobody. Mm. But they seem like the best option as we go deeper and deeper already. It's crazy.
Falcons are still going to win.
You loved what you saw from Tua. You thought he was amazing.
Oh, stop. I mean, it's one preseason game. All of a sudden, everybody thinks Drew Aller is going to take the job away
from
Aaron Rodgers.
You saw one preseason game of DeJuan Stribling, and now he's going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Well, that wasn't because of the performance, though. Yeah. That was because of the electrical substation wreaking havoc upon your roster and the skill positions.
Not to go too far back to Offensive Rookie of the Year real quickly before we hit the break.
Yeah.
From the Jordan Tyson standpoint, because we're going to be talking more and more fantasy football as well as we go through the season, and Kendall Valenzuela is going to join us again on a weekly basis. Is he not somebody that you still try to stash?
Who's that? I'm sorry.
Jordan Tyson.
Oh, I would think so. It depends on where you get him, but I think
Obviously like late round, like 9 or later.
Sure, yeah.
Like, I feel like that's just something to keep into consideration, because if he could come back and be useful.
Sure. The problem is, I mean, he has had this, like, maybe it's just really bad string of luck, but he has been, you never want to use the term injury prone, but he has dealt with a lot throughout his college.
Everybody keeps on saying they're not related, and like, that's what, even in his pre-draft process, that
there's a bunch of bad luck.
Everybody was saying, it's not correlated, it's this and it's this. It doesn't change the fact that he still had a lengthy injury history. And honestly, when I first saw it come across my screen on the ticker that he was injured again, I was like, well, yeah, he always is. Reminder, as we have all of this NFL and college football talk, both of our guides are out right now getting you set for the season. But if you join us on a full-time basis, in addition to the guides, you get unlimited access to everything we do at the network each and every day. You can sign up right now for as little as $9.99. vsin.com/subscribe is how you can join us. Speaking of those guides, you know who put in a ton of work on those? Adam Burke. He's joining us next in studio. No, you did okay. You did okay.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Rolling along here Tuesday edition of Money Moves. Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bunn, and Tony back here with you. Excited to have our good buddy Adam Burke back in studio, VSiN.com managing editor. We're going to talk so much Major League Baseball, plenty of NFL, NFL preseason as well. And real quickly, as we get started here, I did just want to say, because we were talking about the 49ers and the electrical substation, you cannot blame the substation for this, but maybe just proximity to the 49ers gets you injured these days. One practice today against the 49ers, Chargers center Tyler Biadasz, linebacker Kyle Kennard, and wide receiver Quentin Johnston all injured today. So that's another start for the day.
Yeah. The Biadasz one, we should maybe not joke about. He was carted off when Sebastian Valdez fell into his left knee. So it's a pretty big blow for our Chargers offensive line. We'll see what the blow actually is. That was considered retooled, rebuilt potentially. Slater already was
dealing with something. After all their injuries last year, too. Yep.
And Slater was dealing with something a little bit earlier in camp, too. So if all of a sudden this is going to be something, that sucks.
Yeah. Adam, you've been monitoring all the injuries and updates.
Yeah, I was just curious. Did the substation shock him, and that's why he fell into Biadasz's leg? Is that what happened?
Maybe. And the Chargers are the Bolts, so that would just make too much sense across the board. No, but it is. I do feel bad for them just early on already, considering how much the offensive line derailed their season last year, to already be having this kind of stuff. And this is, I know it's par for the course in the NFL preseason, Adam, but every single day we're hearing new names that are dinged up and important names.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I guess if there's a silver lining, I mean, you never want to see anybody injured, but if there is a silver lining, right, I mean, we still have two preseason games left to go. So, you know, if you are going to lose somebody of impact or deal with cluster injuries, at least you have some time to work through it. And also there's going to be some guys that get cut from rosters that maybe you could pick up that, you know, kind of plug and play, something like that. So at least there's that. If there is any silver lining for any of these teams dealing with injuries, it's still early enough to be able to make adjustments and maybe make, you know, trades for somebody who's, you know, on a roster crunch, something like that. But yeah, you certainly never like to see that. And again, for the Chargers, you know, a team that, you know, Harbaugh's going to want to run the football. You know, Mike McDaniel's going to want to run the football. This is about the worst case scenario for them to be going through this again.
Yeah, I do wonder, too, because I know up on the website you're keeping track of starters, right, for the preseason, who's going to play and who's not. Harbaugh had said the plan was to play starters this week for the Chargers, and one of the things he had noted was he wanted to get the reps between Herbert and Biadasz together for a game.
Right.
Well, now with Biadasz potentially, I would assume, not even playing in this game, we'll see what the length of the injury is. You wonder if that maybe changes his mindset to play the starters this week, too.
Right, and another thing about that, like you said, I mean, you know, you start losing starting offensive linemen, right? I mean, you're not putting your franchise quarterback at risk if you don't have to. So, you know, if you're going to have a backup center in there, you're going to have some other backups in there. Maybe your plan was, hey, let's get Justin Herbert out there to play a little bit, but plans change. And the one nice thing about the preseason is that we're going to know that, right? We're going to know because Harbaugh's going to go, yeah, you know what? Herbert's actually not going to play this week, or we're going to get him out there, but it's going to be very quick. So that's the nice thing about the preseason. These coaches will tell you more often than not who's going to play and for how long. So that's definitely valuable information from a betting standpoint. Now, of course, preseason lines are pretty soft, right? It doesn't take a whole lot to move these. It's a race to news. So you kind of have to infer some things sometimes, but yeah, this is one where if they wanted to get Herbert out there, they're definitely thinking, you know, pretty long and hard about that now going forward.
Chargers laying 1.5 in that game coming up on Thursday against San Francisco, total 38.5. Also, just worth noting on this for inquiring minds about Biadasz in general, Jake Slaughter, who they drafted in the second round, he has been in the competition for left guard, but is a natural center, so he's going to be the next man up, you would imagine, to slot into that position in the short term. Were you surprised at all, just in terms of kind of week one preseason takeaways, at the level with which the dogs were barking and the steam chasing did not succeed?
I mean, again, it's a pretty high variance environment, right? You know, you're talking about the second halves of these games where guys who probably won't see a regular season snap, guys who might be ticketed for the practice squad, are going to be the ones out there deciding these games. So it is pretty high variance in the second half. The one thing I like to try to prioritize is if you got a mobile quarterback, it's probably something I'm going to look to back in the preseason, a guy who's on the, you know, third or fourth on the depth chart who can move around a little bit. You think about what Haynes King was able to do, for example, in that Hall of Fame game. Offensive line play around the league is not very good in general, right? Offensive line play in college football is not very good. So the gap between the starters and the second tier guys and the third tier guys, that's probably going to be the biggest drop off on any NFL roster outside, of course, of the quarterback position. So a lot of things break down in games. And if you've got guys who can kind of extend plays, maybe throw on the run a little bit, something like that, those are the guys I feel a little bit more comfortable backing. We'll see if we get a correction here this week. You know, we'll see if favorites end up doing well, but I think it's just, you know, one of those things, right? It's just a high variance environment. I don't think there's anything we can really read into.
Well, so I'll read into it a little bit, and I'll just say this, because I think if you looked at them too, some of the even the openers didn't really do well. If you're betting those, you were still under. And I think there's a good example happening this week on Friday, Green Bay and Denver. Last week, we were told by Denver and Sean Payton, the starters were going to play. That line opens up 3.5 at DraftKings, the first number you see. I think that's a number that tells you the starters are going to play, because, again, you just don't know how long they're going to play, what they're going to do. This has been steamed up already to like 6.5. And it's like, right. I think that number was already accounting for the presence of Bo Nix in the starters, and yet the market was like, we're in, and then pushed this all the way up. So you get this instance where I think it's being accounted for. Bettors clearly don't think that's the case, so they push it up even further. Then you get the steam chasers, to your point, Stormy, who are like, well, the information is there. Let me bet this. And you get this instance, Adam, where it's like, we are overly baking some of this information into already a volatile market, and it might behoove you to just actually go against all of it.
Yeah, and I think something else, too. You know, I think that a lot of us just sort of operate under the assumption that guys don't want to go and play on the road in the preseason, right? You know, I mean, sometimes the veterans will kind of request not to play in road games, stuff like that. But I think maybe we're... And by we, I mean kind of the royal we, everybody. I think we're maybe kind of over-analyzing what being at home means in the preseason, because if you're going to travel somewhere to play a game, you might as well go there and try to play well, right, and win it. You know, and you got guys that are trying to make an impact, trying to show something. It's not like you have, you know, full crowd edges or anything like that at home. But I think we kind of operate under this thought that, you know, there's really no desire to go out there and win when you're playing on the road. Maybe the home team wants to win in front of the fans, or maybe the starters play a little bit longer to get the fans excited about the season and all that. But ultimately, I think if you're traveling for this game, you want it to be worth your while. You want it to mean something. So I think maybe that's part of it too, where, you know, a lot of those underdogs last week were road teams, you know, that did kind of come through. So maybe that's something that we kind of need to reevaluate going forward as well.
For your specific example with Green Bay in Denver this week, is Denver kind of the new, or at least get the feel a little bit of them being the new Baltimore, how like Harbaugh really wanted to win those games? Feels like Denver has kind of been that the last couple years under Sean Payton with the success they've had in the preseason. Could there be something to that layer of it as well? I don't know. Just to give you guys some numbers though, that we're talking about here, the underdog 9-6-1 straight up, 11-4-1 against the spread in week one of the preseason. Unders also came in 12-4. And then that note from Brad Powers about the steam chasing lines that moved 3 or more points side or total pre-kick, 0-10-1 to the number. So keep that in mind, at least from what we have seen here early. As you have a great article up right now, Adam, up on beeson.com, that is kind of detailing all of the information leading into week 2 of the preseason, as JVT alluded to. Anything else, at least right now, that kind of sticks out to you ahead of this week?
Yeah, so basically what I'm doing is I'm just kind of keeping an eye on quarterbacks primarily. You know, and these things do kind of tend to work in tandem, right? So, you know, Mike McCarthy came out and said, you know, Michael Pittman, DK Metcalf, you know, I'd be hard pressed to see them play this week. Aaron Rodgers isn't going to go out there and play with the second string wide receivers, right? So you can kind of read into that a little bit. And again, you know, like I talked about, I've had a piece up on the website here about, you know, kind of some preseason betting tips. Like, the coaches are going to tell you what's going on. This is the only time of the year where they're very forthright. They're very transparent. You know, the beat writers have a lot more access and a lot more things they can talk about now that they won't be able to talk about during the regular season. So, you know, the fact that the coaches kind of say those types of things, you know, I think is pretty valuable. So I'm just kind of tracking that, sort of tracking the social media reports, what the beat writers are saying, all those kinds of things. You know, for example here, like, you know, with the Jaguars taking on the Panthers here this week, of course, the Panthers playing their third preseason game already. Liam Cohen said on Monday, you know, starters will get a couple of drives potentially. To me, that means they're getting a couple of drives, right? Potentially just kind of makes it sound like, hey, if something happens, like what happened with the Chargers, for example, I reserve the right to change my mind, but they're going to be out there, right? But Nick Mullins isn't going to play. So you're going to have Carter Bradley and Joey Aguilar who are going to mop up in this game. So, yeah, people hear, oh, the starters are going to play. So all of a sudden there's this steam move on that team, something like that. Trevor Lawrence might throw 6 to 8 passes in this game, something like that. So, yeah, it's important to hear that the top guys are going to play, but does it really mean anything in the grand scheme of things? I don't know.
Well, and then you get into the other intricate part of it, which is these first half lines get crazy,
right,
too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like,
yeah,
you get these full game lines for the first half. The Bengals last week were a good, really good example. Didn't come close. Beck gets hurt. Raiders get steamed up in the first half, like 2.5. They don't come close. And so you get a bunch of these dynamics, too, where the first half numbers get out of that.
Right. Or like you think about a game on Saturday, like the Commanders and the Lions, right? We know that Dan Campbell is absolutely not playing his starters. He doesn't do it, doesn't like to do it, doesn't want to do it, isn't going to do it. So they recently signed Josh Dobbs because Teddy Two Gloves decided that he wanted to step away and retire from the NFL. Last week, Luke Altmaier had 22 of the 30 pass attempts for Detroit. This week, I think you're going to see a lot more of Josh Dobbs. And Josh Dobbs is a veteran guy, but in a week and a half or so, how deep has he actually gotten into the playbook? So I start thinking about it. And by the way, Dan Quinn for the Commanders, horrible preseason head coach. 8-20 straight up. But I start thinking about it, and I'm like, okay, you know, with Dobbs, right, how vanilla is this going to be? Maybe that's an under type of play then when you look at a game like that.
Dobbs got him right where he wants him, actually. That's how he performs.
We got to step aside here real quickly. When we come back, for as fun as this preseason talk was, we've got some games to bet in Major League Baseball today and some big picture talk as we get nearer and nearer to the postseason. Stick around.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
College football season is right around the corner, and betting it blind is a losing strategy. Get the VSIN College Football Betting Guide today free when you're a VSIN Pro subscriber. It's got previews of all 138 FBS programs, our preseason top 50 power ratings, proven betting systems, and of course, best bets from VSIN's sharpest minds. That's not all, though. VSIN Pro also gets you the NFL Betting Guide as part of your subscription, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time bet splits, and so much more. You can try it out today for just $9.99 or lock in a full year and save 50% with that pro annual subscription. Head over to vsin.com/subscribe for more information or to sign up. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel, Adam Burke with you back here on Money Moves, hanging out. We'll get
watching
back.
Browns highlights.
You were doing that during our last segment too. Like, since when are you such a Browns aficionado?
I mean, I don't know if I'm an aficionado, but they're going over their win total. That's all I know.
I'm fine with them going over the 5.5, not the 6.5. Mm-hmm. Can we get a middle? Can they be a 6-win team? Because I'd be perfectly happy with that.
Right. Look at that. Smooth, graceful.
Are you pro Browns this year? What's your level of belief in your team?
Who are you talking to?
Am I ever pro Browns?
Yeah. Are you pro Cleveland anything?
Yeah, I'm never pro anything. Look,
how about Akron? How about the Zips?
I think they make a bowl game this
year. Going down to week 3, though, brother.
Okay. I mean, that's fine.
You know if he's got a road trip.
Yeah, I think Akron makes a bowl game this year. As far as the Browns go, I mean, I like 51 of the 53-man roster.
Hell yeah.
The two that I don't like would be Deshaun Watson and Shedeur Sanders. So, Mina Kimes said it today. You know, the Browns are a quarterback away. She's not wrong. I mean, the offensive line, they've really retooled that on the fly. They made some pretty decent draft choices. They got rid of Jedrick Wills. The defense is fantastic. Early should be, again, very, very talented. Corner, they're a little bit shallow at corner. They need a little bit more depth there. But running back, they're fine. Wide receiver, they're fine. Harold Fannin's a phenomenal tight end who's maybe more or less a wide receiver. There's a lot to like about this team, except for the most important position on the field. And turns out it's kind of important.
I was really hoping that the second guy you didn't like was like Michael Coach Jr., like the fifth string corner or something like that. You're like, God, I hate that, the way he's been playing.
No, the two guys who are supposed to throw the football that aren't very good at doing it.
To that end, though, I wrote up the alt under 6.5 as one of my best bets in the NFL betting guide. And part of my rationale was that I like the Browns' big picture. I'm excited about them moving forward in years to come when they actually do have a quarterback. But right now they don't. And I have no reason to believe in Deshaun Watson, who clearly Todd Monken wants to be QB1 for whatever reason. So,
yeah, I don't know that Todd Monken wants it. I know who does. And that's Jimmy Haslam. And Jimmy Haslam's the guy who, you know, signs all the checks and is building the new whatever stadium that's going to look like next to the airport.
That looks great. Why isn't it brown? Why is it black? If you were going to color the stadium.
I don't know.
For those who didn't see it, the renderings came out, a little model came out, right? What is this, a center stadium for Ents? And it's all,
at least
like, all black.
Five times bigger than this.
It still looks better than the Roomba that they built here that they call Allegiant Stadium.
The Death Star, that's right.
It really does look like a Roomba if you look at it from up top. Let's stick with Cleveland-themed things, though, as we get into a little Major League Baseball.
Let's do it. That's exciting.
You do have a play today on the Guardians and Giants game. Tough second half for the Guardians, unfortunately, so I hate to continue on a negative mindset. They did just drop 2-3 to the Padres as well, but they get a Giants team that has been significantly worse for the whole season and only a game better than them in the second half.
Yeah, I must have been drinking this morning or something. I actually believe in the Guardians offense here today.
Okay.
They take on Carson Wisenhunt. Wisenhunt's been terrible this season, and specifically terrible against right-handed batters. They're batting .307, .380, .523, .389 weighted on base average. In his small sample size on the road, he's been very bad as well. The Guardians basically their entire offense is using platoons. That's all that they want to do because they're really, really cheap. So their thought is we get two guys who are flawed, we put them together and make one really good player. Based on their offensive numbers this season, that's not really working, but they're going to have six or seven right-handed batters in the lineup today against Wiz and Hunt. So they should be able to hit this guy today. And even if Matt Wilkinson, Tugboat, the 270-pound left-hander that the Guardians traded at the trade deadline, who got called up by the Giants, even if he comes in, he's still left-handed. They're going to have all their righties in the lineup, all of that. So I think Cleveland can do something offensively today. Foster Griffin's first two starts for the Guardians haven't been great. Only one earned run last time out, but did give up three runs in total. Not a whole lot of swing and miss in his arsenal. Guardians bullpen's been pretty bad here in the second half. I played over eight in this one, minus 110. If the Guardians can't hit this guy with their platoon splits and the fact that he can't get righties out, just end the season right now and end my misery and Jensen Lewis's misery and all of our misery.
How you liking Joe Adell?
You know what, man? The dude hits, he violently hits the ball.
When he does it,
it's violent. And he's a guy, I thought about a home run prop on him today with Wizenhunt on the mound. Yeah. But again, obviously with his platoon capabilities, the price just isn't really there. But he could end up, you know, hopefully getting us towards this over eight.
All right, so last week, were you here? I don't think you were. I can't remember. But last week I tried to go against Kyle Leahy with the Philadelphia Phillies, and it did not go well. He opposes Andy Abbott and the Reds. How is this going to go?
Yeah, so this is a guy I've been really skeptical about, and I imagine the reason you went against him is because his expected ERA is about two runs higher than his actual ERA.
Could be.
So there are some negative regression signs in the profile. He's a guy who was a reliever, turned starter, really big workload, obviously, as a starting pitcher throughout the course of the season. Guys set career highs in innings, stuff like that. But he's been really good here of late. Last nine starts, 152 ERA, 347 expected ERA. So again, still two runs higher, but a 260 FIP. 46-9 strikeout to walk ratio. One of the things about pitchers for the Cardinals and, you know, pitchers for the Cubs, teams like that, defensively, they're really, really good behind the starting pitcher. And so you can outperform some of your expected metrics. You're going to outperform an expected ERA that's two runs higher than your ERA, probably not all season long, but Lee's doing it here. And I think he has the chance to continue that here today. The Reds are not a very good baseball team. They were an out away from getting swept in yesterday's doubleheader. And the only reason that they had a chance in that second game was because the Cardinals used all of their high leverage relievers to win game one. So Oliver Marmol tried to kind of patchwork something in game two, wound up not working out, but he'll have all of his leverage guys back today. Andrew Abbott, mediocre at best here throughout the course of this season. Cardinals have the better lineup, in my opinion. I went ahead and laid the short number with St. Louis.
Well, speaking of not very good baseball teams, the Pirates haven't been one for a little while now either. I mean, as recently as 3 weeks ago, they were tied for that final wild card spot. Since July 27th, 6-14, they're 6.5 games out of it now. Do they continue to spiral today against the Tigers? Pittsburgh is actually favored, minus 149 with Braxton Ashcraft growing, but how do you see it?
Yeah, and this is one that actually moving against me a little bit here today. I played the Tigers earlier this morning. Cater Montero on the mound for them, and he's not going to win MVP. He's not even going to get any votes. But as far as the Detroit Tigers are concerned, he might be their most valuable player this season. Kevin McGonigal's been phenomenal offensively, but what Montero has done with Tarek Skubal hurt, Reese Olsen is out, Jack Flaherty hasn't been great, and he's kind of been banged up. Justin Verlander hasn't pitched for them. What this guy has done, 322 ERA, 348 expected ERA, 385 FIP, he's been really, really good. Low strikeout rate does scare some people, myself included, but he also has one of the highest pop-up rates in Major League Baseball, and pop-ups are effectively strikeouts, right? Guys don't advance on them. You know, they're going to be outs 99.999% of the time. So those are basically strikeouts. You know, so Montero's done a really, really good job of keeping guys off balance. No noticeable platoon splits for him. He's been about as good against lefties as he's been against righties. And the Pirates offense has really struggled here for a while. Now, Braxton Ashcraft, one of the most dominant pitching performances that we will ever see. Last time out, 10 strikeouts, complete game in just 85 pitches. He got 13 runs of support, but 8 of those were late in the game. So he was really, really good. But the Tigers have the best offense in baseball against right-handed pitching here in the second half. So I think this one's worth a shot. Montero's been very good. Pretty good pitcher's park here at PNC as well. And Ashcraft, while he's been great, facing a much, much stiffer lineup in the Tigers than he did last time out against the Marlins, and a much stiffer lineup than Montero is going to face with the Pirates. So don't really get this line moving against me. We'll see if, you know, that winds up being the right side. But I took the Tigers here today, plus 135 or so. And again, I think as that line continues to climb, it's an even better play.
Last 90 seconds, how big of a blow is it that Swanson's going to hit the IL and might be out for the rest of the regular season, according to one report?
Yeah, I mean, you know, anytime that you're a team like the Cubs, right, and, you know, you're kind of built on defense, you know, I mean, they do have a very good offense too, but, I mean, they have the best defense in the league by a large margin. Pete Crow Armstrong has a lot to do with that. But, yeah, I mean, it's an issue, you know, but at the same time, this is a team that is pretty deep. They've got some guys who have some positional versatility, so maybe they can kind of move them around.
Sure.
You know, and also, I mean, you kind of look at some of their starters, maybe more tilted toward the fly ball side, so maybe that doesn't mean quite as much with your shortstop being out. But obviously, you know, any team that's in this mix here, it's going to be impactful. And there are a lot of teams, you know, in the mix in a variety of different ways in Major League Baseball right now. So I would say on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10, maybe a 6, something like that with Swanson being out. But again, you certainly hope that he's able to be back for the playoffs.
Yeah. Oblique strain on his left side is what sent him to the injured list. And yes, ideally, he would be able to be back before or in the MLB postseason. Adam, thank you as always for doing this, friend. Happy to have you back in studio.
Yeah, good to be back. And again, I mean, that college football betting guide, yeah. Right? I mean, the college football season coming up so quickly. It's, I think, the most important guide we do over at vsin.com. So head on over there, take advantage of that intro offer, and get your hands on that guide.
We know everybody in the NFL. It's easy to track where they go on a year-to-year basis. College football, not so much. And we've got it covered in that bad boy. We got to step aside. More money moves when we come back on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.